Hey, it's Matt. And before we jump into the episode, I am guessing that if you're listening right now, there's one of two things behind it. Either you saw the title Deconstruction and are curious about it because maybe you've heard the term, you want to find out more, or you already feel like you have a good grasp of what deconstruction is and you want to find out if what we're going to say about it lines up with what you know or have heard about it. Well, then, of course, there are those of you that just love us so much, doesn't matter what the title is, you just want to listen. I'm sure that's most of you. This is a hot topic and an attention-grabbing word. And if you haven't heard the show before, our goal is always to take a faith-based and thoughtful approach to each topic. So feel free to leave any predetermined notions of what it is at the door, and let's walk through deconstruction. This is Consider It Joy.
Consider it pure joy.
Happy, happy joy, joy, happy, happy joy.
See if it sparks joy in you.
Because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance.
Welcome back to another episode of Consider It Joy, an official podcast of 88.3 Life FM. My name is Matt Pelishek.
My name is Aaron Perlman.
And we are your hosts, and we're tackling something today. We are going to attempt to tackle something today that maybe digs a little deeper and maybe digs into like some of those. Sometimes we have words or phrases or ideas that when we hear them, we have instant associations with them. And so that's why I think this is important, because over the last several years, there's a term that's been around kind of churchy spaces called deconstruction. Mm-hmm. And I've heard it presented in different ways. If you kind of casually just come across this term, sometimes it can have very negative connotations. Sometimes some people see this as a ministry connotation. And so I think it's important if we're going to be really good communicators and be able to either talk about a topic or address those that are dealing with something we're unclear on or we differ on, to sort of sort through it. What does it mean? How does this actually apply or not apply? All of those things. And so today, I'm excited. We've been trying to do this for a while. Preston Ulmer is with us. He's a pastor and an author with a couple of great books that are out, Doubters Club and Deconstruct Faith, Discover Jesus. Preston, man, thanks for joining us.
Hey, I'm so honored to be able to do this, and I'm grateful that we finally made it happen. So thanks for having me on.
Super excited, man.
I'm interested right out of the gate because Matt has read up on you and read some of your books. So I'm a guy like maybe like some of our podcast listeners were coming in out of the cold, like getting to know Preston Ulmer. So let me ask you, so what was it? Because we're tackling this topic of deconstruction of deconstruction in our faith. What was it that sparked you to want to write the book in the first place?
That's a great question. So the first book I wrote, Aaron, was The Doubters Club. That's a organization we started years ago where we get people who are Christians and non-Christians modeling friendship and pursuing truth in their city. And so we've launched those all around the world. That book came out. And then naturally, what starts to pop out, you can imagine, out of a community of doubters and atheists and spiritually wounded, is this term deconstruction. So when I first started writing the proposal for that book, I actually was thinking, okay, like, let's just approach the topic as it's being discussed in like everyday conversations. I'm always interested, obviously, in the academic term and what the studies are showing us. But I was like, we have enough people in this, in doubters clubs everywhere. So let's approach it like that. Then what I quickly found out, so I didn't approach it like, we're going to deconstruct faith and discover Jesus. I was just more of, where will this lead us? And I think my proposal was pretty sloppy to my publisher at that point. And then they told me, they said, hey, we trust you to write this. And those are big words for me. So then I started interviewing people. Here's the process. I started interviewing. And, you know, some of the listeners would know the name, like Joshua Harris. He wrote I Kissed Dating Goodbye and was really big proponent, maybe one of the first people to lead the way on the purity movement, even though he rejects that now. Interviewed him, interviewed some more celebrity Christians, interviewed lay people, and realized, wait a second, this isn't a fad. This is actually something, and we can get into this, when done right, this might be a discipline of a disciple, not of an atheist. And that took the trajectory of the book. So that's how it kind of came about.
So, well, let's maybe start with the word then, just out of the gate, because again, that's like I said earlier on, this can be a trigger word, kind of depending on everyone's experience with it. Deconstruction, how it's been presented to us, who's presented it to us, what the background of that person, because I feel like I know people who, even in us, you know, we do Christian radio, and there's a handful of artists over the last years that have used that word. Some of them have walked away completely from the faith. Others have just said some things and asked some questions that made people uncomfortable in that process. And so how, let's start with, how do we even define it? Can we define deconstruction? What would be, what's the right way to do that?
Yeah, I would love to. I actually love this question, Matt. So let's just out the gate say this. The word sounds like destruction. Okay. And it's not, it sounds like it. And it's similar. It sounds like deconversion. And it's not. Okay, so if someone's listening and they're like, my kid said they were deconstructing and now they deconverted. I totally get that. I totally get that. We're talking about something completely different, though. So I took this, what I'm about to give you, this definition. And every interview I asked, are you comfortable with this definition? And again, this is across the spectrum of believer, unbeliever, and everywhere in between. And every person said, yes, I'm comfortable with that. So here's what I'm talking, deconstruction. I'm talking the picking apart of a belief, tradition, or practice to test it for its truthfulness, usefulness, and effectiveness. That's what I'm talking about. Picking apart belief, practice, tradition to test it for its truthfulness, usefulness, and effectiveness. Now, I'm not saying that's not scary. Or that doesn't feel like, is that a slippery slope? What I am saying is when we define it that way, you can see if we're dealing with truth, if the reality is we're trying to get to truth, and if all truth is God's truth, not just the Bible, but all truth is God's truth, we really don't have anything to be scared of unless we're holding on to practices and traditions tighter than Jesus, then it might be pretty frightening. So that's how I define it.
And I think I think you referenced it right there, practices and traditions. That's the stuff that sounds like man-made, not that God made.
Right.
And that's the stuff that tends to have people like fall away. Because I think of, for the longest time, I could think of different Christian artists that have stepped away from the Lord, from their faith, I should say.
Right.
And I used to think, up until just a few years ago, that it was because, well, did they really have a relationship with Christ? I think there's a deeper question to that. And maybe this might be a theme for me today, but it's something I really held on to is, did Jesus really rise from the grave? I think that's the key element. If you don't believe that, then that's the true foundation, I think.
Bingo.
Hey guys, just real quick, I'm so sorry to interrupt the episode, but I wanted to say thank you so much for listening. And I also wanted to say, if you enjoy this kind of content, faith-based content, we have some great friends of the show that also do an amazing podcast. It's called the Light Roast Podcast. Now, some of you may listen to this podcast because you've listened to the Joyride, you listen to myself and Aaron on the radio, and that led you to this show. Well, the Light Roast Podcast, similar to me in that I used to listen to this guy. His name is Obadiah, and he was on a station I listened to for a long time, and he is one of my favorite radio guys of all time. And this podcast that he just started with his friend Mindy, it's really talking about what's new in the world, but he does it in a way that doesn't weigh you down with the hard stuff or the dark stuff. He'll make you laugh. They're going to make you think. It's another faith-based approach to what's happening in the world, sharing some of their own hearts and their own stories. If you like Consider It Joy, I really think you're going to like these guys. Make sure to check out Light Roast Podcast. All right, back to the show.
Bingo. Yeah. Can I jump in there, Aaron?
Because
when you said a few things there. One is, that's the key. I mean, even the Apostle Paul said, if that didn't happen, everything hinges on it, and we are to be pitied among all people. If that didn't happen, right? Number two, as you said, that's key foundation. And that's what deconstruction is in its purest form. Now, anyone can hijack the word. We can hijack terms all the time. We do all the time. But I'm trying to be like, let's be pretty specific. If we are talking, we're going to pick things apart and get to a foundation, okay? We get to a foundation. If the foundation is not The authority of a Jesus-looking God. I'll try to be as explicit as I can there, right? I believe Jesus is God, but also, which means your view of God needs to look like Jesus. If the foundation is not the authority of a Jesus-looking God, then your foundation needs to be like uprooted and re-poured. If it is a Jesus-looking God, it's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And the traditions and the practices and the things that we held on to, I mean, it's ludicrous. Okay. It is absolutely ludicrous. I came to a strong, vibrant faith in college. Okay. It is ludicrous to think that at 37 years old, I believe everything the exact same way I did when I was 19.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is the definition of closed-minded, bigoted, shallow, all the things. So then what does it mean? Well, it means we're going to grow. We need to grow. Our views will develop. Our views will change. And I'll say this. You would be the first podcast or anything publicly I've said this. On my next book, I am toying with the idea of how do we just give a giant permission slip to curiosity and change. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
There it is. I trust your audience, so keep it between us.
They're pretty trustworthy. Except that one person, but otherwise they're pretty trustworthy. I like that word a lot, permission, because I think something that I've come to realize, even deconstruction to me is a relatively new term. I mean, I've known it for a while, but I think some of the things that even that I've experienced, when I look back at it, especially with the definition as you explain it, I'll be like, okay. I've been doing that. I've been going back, you know, some of those things. And I think the reason that permission stuck out to me is because there are things where there's almost a guilt factor, you know, where I've been around a handful of churches, some of them very conservative, where it was hymnals and you sing the benediction and that to really, what's the word I just lost? Like
progressive, maybe.
Not even progressive, charismatic. That's what I was looking for. And I mean, really charismatic. And I'll talk about that some more. But where there were things, and especially because I grew up in it, when you're young, you take in these things as a part of the whole. So you guys are talking about the foundation that is Jesus Lord. You know, did he do what he said he did? And then the other things I'm putting in there with it. I don't know. The people that I saw, I remember vividly, this is like a youth camp I was at. And I saw somebody who was on staff go in a canoe with other adult staffers, and they had a 6-pack of beer with them. And I remember just thinking like, oh no.
At a youth camp. What's happened?
And they weren't even associated. Like, I want to draw the wrong picture. They were a separate thing. I just witnessed it and I knew who they were. They were just out for the afternoon. And so, you know, those sort of things were in its moment was like, well, apparently they're not the real deal because they have some cans of beer with them. I have no idea what they were doing. As far as I know, they went fishing and then they drank them. You know what I mean? And so.
Wait, they drank the fish?
No, I'm just kidding. But then, so as years progress, I'm using real surfacey examples right now. Realizing that maybe something like that, oh, maybe I can let go of that idea that because I saw somebody holding a beer can that puts them in this category of bad or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And then what other things did I pick up through my upbringing in the church and the culture part of the church that I've held on to just as tightly, not realizing, oh, that either wasn't important or it's maybe not even biblical in some cases. And so the permission slip, that's a long way of saying I really like that term because we can feel guilty. There were times I would feel guilty. It's like, oh, I hear what you're saying, but I'm pretty sure those things are bad or that we have to do things this way. That's a hard thing, I think, for anyone that you've been around your whole life, one thing and one way of doing that thing, you know?
Yeah. In the book, Deconstruct Faith, Discover Jesus, I do talk about actually how do we deconstruct. So if I can, excuse me for a moment, just say like I give the analogy of Mount Rushmore. and at Mount Rushmore, and Mount Rushmore was built through the Great Depression. And whether listeners agree with this or not is not the issue. It's that this was built by a person who said, we want to pick the four faces that have brought hope to America before. So the person who oversaw the project did that. And from the 20s to the 40s, 1920s to 1940s, and over 90% of how they got Mount Rushmore in the mountain, the faces in the mountain, was through dynamite. Okay. Like, blow it up. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what we know. That's got to be super strategic. You don't just light TNT and toss it, and then you get Abraham Lincoln. Okay. You don't, that doesn't happen.
That's
but
awesome.
Here's the picture I want to paint. We have a giant mountain in front of us. And if and anyone who's listening, it's either you or someone you love that it's that close to us. Like, we don't even, we're not even 2 degrees separated from this. We are 1 degree, or it's internal. We are, there's a mountain called religion that's in front of everybody. You call it the church, whatever, but I'm going to try to use the most general term, religion. And we have a bunch of people with sticks of dynamite that are like, I'm going to blow that up because it's an obstruction to my journey. Okay. Fair.
Yeah.
That's kind of what, that's deconstruction. What if the church came alongside and didn't say, put the dynamite away, but said, let's be really strategic. Let's blow it up together. And let's put the face of Jesus in the side of the mountain, and let's see what kind of hope that brings. That's why I love the term Jesus looking God, because God does not look like the faith of your parents. God does not look like the church. Oh, let me say this. The clearest picture we have of God, let me say it that way, is not in the faith of your parents, in the church. It's actually not even in the totality of the Bible. The clearest picture, the only time in scripture it said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, is in Jesus. So the book, I paint that picture and I say, so here's a fuse method. Here's a method to light the fuse with people you love and even with yourself. And to your point, Matt, the F stands for finding the specific thing. So in your instance, it's beer. Okay. So, which hopefully you've deconstructed by now, but grace to those who haven't. So the find the specific, the U stands for understand where it came from. Where does this idea come from? That's key. I give you examples of how I've been challenged to let go of my own biases and preferences to realize it's not based on the authority of Christ. The S is share the impact of your journey. So you always do this in community. That's why I don't like when people are like, I deconstructed out of the church. I'm like, oh, stay in and keep deconstructing. And then the E stands for engage with what remains, which I would say would be the authority of Jesus.
Yeah.
So that's the fuse method. So you use the fuse method and you've now deconstructed IPAs.
Yes.
There's a lot of people that I'll bump into that said that they tried deconstructing their faith and they just walked away because of they were mistreated.
Yeah,
basically, sure. That's a key ingredient. But let me ask you this, because I'm sure you found this out by interviewing people. What do you say to people when I'm sure you may have talked to somebody who walked away because they were mistreated in the church, but how is it only that the case when it's only in the church where people go to school and they may have been bullied at school and they give, have you ever met anybody who's been bullied at school and you know, I'm giving up, I'm not coming back tomorrow. Or you go to work at a job, your boss treats you a little bit more disrespectful than the others, or you have a tough boss, but yet, you know, you still find a way to come back to work the next day. Where if we go to church and we're, you know, we're mistreated a certain way, or the church music's too loud, or whatever the case may be. Well, you know what? I just can't. I'm gonna leave it. Why is it only in the church do we see that in things?
It's a great question, Aaron. I think a few things come to mind. Okay, and I'm not. By the way, let me just say I don't know all the answers here.
No, just something that's come up to me of late.
Yeah. So a few things. One is school is not voluntary. And so there are people who will switch schools based on how they're treated. They'll switch. They don't opt out. I mean, that's, you know, as a parent of two kiddos, I'm like, we can't really let them opt out of school. So it's not voluntary. Church is voluntary. Addition to that is church is the only institution that's dealing with the soul. You're actually dealing with something that is now wrapped up in that would be what Jesus says, mind, heart, strength, soul, all of that. The Old Testament uses the word leb. It's one entity. It's like there's spirit and then there's material. Okay, so what I'm saying is you're dealing with soul. In that, you're dealing with emotions. You're dealing with philosophy. You're actually dealing with the most vulnerable pieces of us. So when we talk about change and growth, what we're actually talking about is soul care. We're not talking about, I mean, no one's going to argue like, oh yeah, we're going to change and grow physically. Okay, we know that. We're talking about soul care. So now you're in the business of the most vulnerable area of a human's life. Okay, now hurt hurts worse in the soul. It just does. Like breakups hurt worse than a broken arm, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like if someone listening to this is in the middle of a divorce, if they're going to talk about the pain and then you talk about someone else who just had shoulder surgery, the divorce hurts worse.
And like, how can God be then involved in that?
Bingo. So now you add the layer of the invisible that you're like, okay, this person speaks on behalf of God. So now the hurt is tied to God. And here's how I'd say it. Aaron, if you and I, let's say that you're a neighbor, okay, that you're a doctor. I'm out hiking one day. I come back. I had cut my foot. This actually happened to a friend of mine. I cut my foot and then I go to the doctor and they go, hey, you got to amputate some toes. You got an infection.
That's a horrible thing to your friend. It's horrible.
Yeah. So his was toes. Let's be more dramatic. Let's say foot. Let's say they got to amputate my foot. And I'm like, what, right now? And they go, yeah, right now. Call your wife. She's going to say goodbye to your left foot. And we're going to amputate your foot. Okay. I got trust with the doctor, right? I got trust. So then I'm like, okay, go under. They cut my foot off. And then I'm hanging out with you at the neighborhood pool. And you're like, Preston, what happened to your foot? And I was like, I got an infection in a riverbed and they had to cut it off like 2 days later. And you're a doctor and you're like, wait. You know, we have these things called antibiotics. And I'm like, what? And you go, yeah, antibiotics. You should use them. No one recommended those. Now I'm super mad because I'm left without a foot. Okay. Without my left foot. So I'm mad because I have no foot. It actually won't matter, at least for short term, how many people say, but most doctors are good.
Right.
Right. Most doctors are really nice.
Yeah.
Most doctors know about that. Well, here's the deal. My doctor didn't, and I'm missing a foot because of it. That's physical pain. Now translate that same principle to the spiritual world. And we say things like, but most churches.
Mm-hmm.
And most pastors, they're like, yeah, but mine did this. So I think that's how we get here. It's a different ball game when you're dealing with the spirit. It's a much different ball game when you're dealing with authority. And then you add hurt on top of it. We are actually responding the same way we would respond to physical pain, but you got to understand it's a deeper, more embedded thing.
And so for me, this is where I end. This is what I've learned of late, is where I go back to. But did Jesus rise from the grave? I have to go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's still the same, then
yes,
I've got to be willing to not put my faith in that
yes
situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So did Jesus rise? It's the right question. Like I wish everybody had that kind of Christianity. In fact, this last weekend I preached at our church about the difference between being a Christian and being a disciple. Okay. And so that's a disciple's mindset. That's what catapulted disciples into the world, is Jesus rose from the grave, right? That's what did it. And I promised this person, I won't say their name, but someone who I interviewed for the book, I asked, so what do you do with Jesus? Like, genuinely, I'm not trying to like bait and switch. And they said, I still don't know what to do with Jesus. Because they're really interested, because they're convinced that, hey, the resurrection might have happened.
Do you think then that when people start thinking about deconstruction, well, I've got to look at this differently. It's because of pride. Like, I can't let that part of my view go. And God can't have it all.
Well, I think the difference is your foundation's right. Your foundation is the resurrection of the person of Jesus Christ. What if your foundation was the interpretation of Genesis 1? What if your foundation was biblical inerrancy and no error in the Bible? Okay. And by the way, I believe in the Bible. I'm like a big fan of it. I preach from it and I teach my kids it. But what I'm saying is the foundation, when Jesus said, if you build your life on what I've taught you, when the storms come, it will last. The foundation, and elsewhere, by the way, he points out, and you know this, but he points out to the religious people, you're searching for me, you're searching the scriptures for life, and it's pointing to me, and I'm in front of you. So your foundation's right. And I think what happens, here's what happens. Here's where the church is missing it, and here's where people who are deconstructing are missing it. What happens is people deconstruct and they realize my foundation was faulty, okay? Be it whatever, it's just not the resurrection of Jesus. The church then exiles them before they exit. They say, you're not a Christian if you don't believe X, Y, and Z, the things they just deconstructed. The church didn't teach and hasn't been teaching, hey, your foundation's faulty. Can we help with a new foundation? That's why I'm saying, let us come alongside. I have pastors that I'm coaching that are going through the deconstruction process. And what we realize is they're asking a lot of questions, and true deconstruction doesn't just let you ask questions, let you answer differently too. But before we get to an answer, I say, before you get to an answer, let's keep going. Get to the authority. That's why the you is understand, where does this come from? And if it comes from Jesus, it actually is more solidified. If it doesn't come from Jesus, then it's like, I don't have to hold this as tightly. So your foundation is the resurrection, is the right one. People who deconstruct and then deconvert hit a faulty foundation. So they said, oh, okay, this thing is terrible. And I think as the church, we're like, good riddance, when we should have been like, whoa, 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 we can help. We can help. Yeah. So
do you think, I don't know if this is too broad of a question. We did an episode a while ago about apologetics, and we kind of talked a little bit, like you're saying, the Genesis 1 thing, and a little bit about, is it okay to not have to be right? is it okay to not have to be in one of these, you know, whether it's like a formal debate with somebody who's wanting to debate, or it's just that thing where somebody has questions and we feel we have to have the answer for it. Either way, like we have to say, well, no, but here's why. And I read Josh McDowell's book, and here's what the answer is for it. Evidence that demands a verdict. So we talked a little bit about that, and kind of, I think, found ourselves in a place of, you don't have to be, your focus is in the wrong spot. But do you think, I guess the broader question that I'm implying is that maybe even more a way of thinking, and I don't even know if I could say that's just a church way of thinking or a Western way of thinking, where it's like, okay, this is my thing, and I know the thing. If you challenge my thing, you're a threat, as opposed to understanding more about your thing. Does that make sense?
I don't know what thing you're talking. No, I do. I do. Yeah. I understand. Man, gosh, this is like,
I know we kind of dug deep in.
No, let's go. Three. Let's do it. And if you're listening and you're like, this is the deep end, keep it on. We're going to keep you awake while you're driving. Okay.
Yep.
The idol. Well, let me say a phrase and ask you what your thoughts are on this, and then it'll lead the conversation.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I want to know your thoughts, Matt and Aaron, on this phrase. I believe the opposite of faith is not doubt. I believe the opposite of faith is certainty. Tell me what feelings come up there.
That's interesting. It makes me want to like dwell on it for.
So I'll give you a good example. Because in that podcast, I end the podcast with this thought, and it was something for me that I always believed when I came to Christ, I always believed that this was the case, that, and I've changed my views on it, that there's going to be a rapture. There may be, I don't know. But now I believe there won't be a rapture because of how I've lived in the news industry. I'm a news anchor and weather forecaster, and just to see how the world lives. And stuff. But I also can come to the fact that even if that's wrong and Christ does come, guess what? I still know Jesus Christ. And no matter what, I will be fine, however God sees it. So I'm okay. So that's, now I guess I'm more certain on that ground level. But what I'm getting at is, like, I was certain I would have died.
Yeah.
There's a rapture. It's coming. I read Left Behind, and I'm guaranteed this is going to happen. Yeah. Now that's not how I feel. I don't know if that's the same thing.
Totally. So here's why I say that about faith and certainty. I think certainty is an idol. I think it's an idol. I'll give an example. We actually don't operate out of certainty at any point in our life. Excuse me. Even when it comes to, like, let's say you're going to get in a car after this interview and you're going to go and you're going to, like, if someone said, hey, are you absolutely certain nothing's going to happen when you get in the car?
Like, you get in a plane. Like,
yeah.
Right. We don't know how that works.
Yeah, of course. The answer is like, no, I'm not absolutely certain. So imagine someone goes, well, then why would you get in the car? Mm-hmm. Why would you get in the plane? Well, because I don't base my decisions on certainty ever, by the way. So let's take, again, a really intimate relationship, my wife and I. So if you all were at my wedding, which I feel like if we knew each other right then, you would be. It seems like we get along pretty well. If you all were at my wedding and you're like, hey, how do you know Lisa is not going to, like, leave you when you're 50? Okay. And I'd be like, first of all, leave my wedding. secondly, I'd be like, I guess I don't know with absolute certainty. So then you go, well, then why would you marry her if you don't know? And I would say this, because based on the confidence I have, I will commit in the face of uncertainty. That's faith. That's faith. So knowing all the answers, we're not in based on the rightness of our answers.
Yeah.
Like that's not the thing ever. And let me say this even more. God named his people Israel, which means to strive with God. And if you ask a modern day rabbi, how do you talk about that? Like, to strive with God, they'd say, well, God named us God wrestlers. That's what he named us. That's a badge of honor, by the way, is God wrestlers. Because when you wrestle, you can't do that from far away. That's a very intimate thing. So the very nature of not knowing and wrestling with your faith is to be in relationship with God. It's people who are apathetic towards or absolutely certain of that are far from God. And I think we see that in the scriptures as well.
So with that in mind, do you think for those that feel something that triggered, and I even hesitate to use that word because it's a real response. I don't even mean it in a negative sense. But to somebody that's heard about deconstruction, and they get that feeling like, ooh, but I know that's not right. Maybe instead interpreting that as, no, they are evaluating something, but that's a red flag on your thing. That's a red flag that you are needing to deconstruct or needing to reevaluate something.
So are you asking, Matt, like, the person who hears it, they're a little triggered that, like, that thing's close to them?
Whether it's specific to an item within. So if you're like, oh, my nephew is deconstructing right now, and that doesn't sit well with me. I don't like that they're deconstructing. And some of it could just be like what we've already covered. You've had the wrong definition or not a full definition of what it is. But maybe it's like, well, why should that be scary to me or to you if somebody else is going through that process? If we already believe what we believe, I think it almost says more about us probably in that moment.
Yeah, tell me more about that. Why does it say more about us?
Because there's something, I think, in the phrasing of it or the word, you realize whatever those associations are with deconstructing, you're not comfortable with. So then you have to go down the path. Well, what part of that am I not comfortable with? They're asking questions. They don't know if they believe in Jesus. They don't know if they believe there was, they said, they don't even know if there really was an ark and a flood over the whole earth. And I just can't deal with that. So I think it kind of starts making you almost have to ask those same questions. Which part of the thing are you not comfortable with it? And then what about that is making me troubled or, you know, concerned over it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Why does this matter so much to me?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you have someone who says, my kid, and let's use a real life example. Are we allowed to be like a little edgy?
Yeah, let's sure. do it. Let's be it.
Okay. Okay. Let's say,
let's take the, what's the number one thing that you found that's making people deconstruct?
Sexuality.
Sexuality. Okay.
I'd say sexuality, politics, and the doctrine of hell. Those are like a top three close ties. Okay.
Yeah.
But let's take one that feels really personal. Sexuality. When you have someone you love, and again, if you're listening and you're more, let's say you're an evangelical, church-going, and I mean that as a compliment. I don't actually mean that in a bad way. And you have someone you love that's deconstructing sexuality, so they're asking questions around sexuality. And I actually just had this conversation with Sean McDowell, Josh's son. And so then what ends up happening is they're asking questions that you feel certain on, right? You're resolved. Like,
yeah.
I'm imagining a 60 to 70 year old grandparent, pretty resolved. And they're like, I feel certain on this. Okay. One or two things can happen. One is you can become really curious about the person. Okay. Become really curious about the person. And that's like, hey, Johnny, why is that so important to you? Ah, okay. Become really curious about the person. The other is you become really curious about the topic. So now, again, if you're like, oh, you're endorsing asking questions, for sure I am. What I'm actually endorsing is finding truth.
Yeah.
That's what I'm endorsing. So now I become curious about the topic. The good news, something Aaron and I already settled, that again, if it's said here on the podcast, it is gospel, apparently, and I do believe this. But what we already settled was the foundation of our faith is not the rightness of our view of sexuality.
Mm. Mm.
And this is coming from someone who holds a pretty traditional view on sexuality. But the foundation of our faith is not that.
Right.
The foundation of our faith is that God came, conquered death, forgives us of our sins. And now, if I believe in that and his authority, I start to build on top of that. I may wrestle the rest of my life with the doctrine of hell. What does it mean?
Who goes
Where
there?
Is it? Who goes there? I may wrestle. In fact, one time I was at a doubters club, and this is like early days of the doubters club. So if you're listening, it just means we have two co-moderators, Christian, non-Christian. And the topic that night was hell, because the group gets to vote on the topic the time before. Okay, so like tomorrow we have a doubters club tomorrow night, and it's, is the Western Church biblical? That's what they want to talk about. Okay, so this time back then they voted on the topic of hell. They cleverly called it "Why the Hell." Okay, they thought it was so funny.
Yeah,
they thought it was funny. I'm a pastor, and I would say, okay, so they're like, so then we're going back and forth, have a great dialogue. In the back walks this lady, young lady, and she said, I will tell you why I can't be a Christian. Can you imagine? This is back before we had multiplied doubters clubs. There's probably about 50 people in the room. And I said, why would you not be a Christian? And she said, I cannot be a Christian if I have to say my atheist friends are going to hell.
Mm.
So I asked her her name, because I believe calling people by name is actually better, right? And so then I said her name, and I said, hey, it's not the rightness of your belief about hell that gets you saved. It's your trust in who Jesus said he was, what he did, and what he's still doing that saves you. And she goes, I can get on board with that. And I remember there's a Christian in the room later who was trying to like, no, but you need to believe this. And it's like, whoa. She can wrestle, she can deconstruct that the rest of her life. And to the person who's really uncomfortable right now, let me just ask this question. The thief on the cross that Jesus said, this day I'll see you in paradise. What was that thief's view on sexuality? Do you know?
Nobody knows.
Politics? Nobody knows. Inerrancy of scripture? Rapture?
He just knew that Jesus was the Son of God.
Bingo!
That's all that mattered.
He trusted Jesus. That's all that mattered. And Jesus said, I'll see you in paradise.
Yeah.
So this was
on
that topic. It actually is something that came up to me the other day. Because I had officiated a couple of people's weddings, and some have not been successful. So I've had a that hurts. But I saw it had made me question, like, what am I reading to these people at their weddings? And I'm going through 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And it's something I caught. I think it's worth bringing out on sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in love, it's talking about love. It does not act disgracefully. It does not seek its own benefit. It is not provoked. Does not keep an account for wrong suffered. Verse 6, it does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. And it keeps every confidence. It believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. So if Jesus is love and Jesus is righteous, you know, that's the foundation. Yes, you can go deep into what sexuality is, on what the Bible talks about, whether it be homosexuality or, you know, adultery, whatever the case may be. But you've got to put Jesus in context first.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter who that person is. Everybody's mm-hmm. loved. Mm-hmm. It's the act of whatever that is that Jesus has talked about that is not righteous. Those are the things that separate us. That's the sin. It's just recognizing on what that is. On the
but same. how many other actions are we part of?
Right? Exactly. No. Right. That's just one. I mean, by far, by no means am I innocent of any of those things.
Correct.
I know that I've failed. Maybe there's a sexual sin that I struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
But the key ingredient is I still have to go back to the very beginning, which I said I would. That did Jesus rise from the dead? Do I that's believe right. that yeah. I hold that? Yeah. Is that my foundation? And that's where I need to go back to at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Bingo. 100%.
So I think we've done a pretty good job from a theological aspect, kind of talking about this and why, like, it's okay. It's a part of a process. I wonder sometimes about even the outside of that. Everybody wants to be heard or seen. Like, people want to be acknowledged as people. And sometimes when we're doing these things that we're talking about where we want to be right or want them to know why they're wrong, we're discounting their experience itself. And I feel like that's something more recently I've been kind of learning where I've been leaning on an answer that I thought I knew rather than no, that what this person is saying right now is that was not my experience. A good example is Aaron and I have been doing our radio show for a long time. And Aaron is one of these people who is full of lots of stories. And I think we've even talked about this early on. So when we start doing the show and we're just sharing things about some of the adventures or people that he's met, you know, eventually it starts feeling like, MacGyver was really on your plane, Aaron. That's fine. And I just want to start dismissing. It was like, no, he really was, you know, and it's like a lighter way of saying though, like it, if I chose to, it'd be a lot easier to just dismiss it. There goes Aaron again with another one of his wonky stories, but we do it in a more serious capacity or more, you know, when you talk about soul issues and we discount the person's experience and said, well, this is the thing. Yeah. I can't deal with the idea of my atheist friends going to hell or I can't mm-hmm. the hurt that I've experienced. Well, mm-hmm. And now we're just discounting everything that they just said. And mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe talking about that a little bit, like how can we approach people better in those moments?
Yeah. Well, you know, Jesus was asked a ton of questions in scripture, right? Over 300, actually. I forget the exact number, but he directly answered, it's arguably four. Four. Now, this is from a book that's called Jesus is the Question. And what's so interesting is he keeps asking questions. I think we feel a pressure, Matt, to get people saved, I think, honestly.
Yeah.
So we do the yeah, but, because we're like, yeah, but we need you to, if you get in a car wreck on the way home, And we forget we're not Jesus. Like, we're not. We're disciples. So Jesus said, they'll know you're my disciples by the way you love, how I've loved you. So we forget that. I also believe that that scorecard totally ruins our friendships and our relationships. We forget how to be human. Christians are super weird. I'm one of them, okay? We just don't know how to not be strange. We don't know how to throw events without agendas. We don't know how to listen to people we disagree with without disagreeing out loud. Mm-hmm. We just don't. And we've been trained as such. And that's not, that, I guess it is an indictment on the church. I guess it would be. But as a pastor, I'd say that from the inside, not from the outside, that we've been trained that if we disagree, we need to be clear on that disagreement, right? We need to make sure that people know the truth. Well, here's what's so fascinating. When does Jesus do that? Like, we just don't see him grabbing people's shoulder, telling them about the cosmic bomb called hell that's about to go off. We do see some, like, a very curious rabbi asking a lot of questions. And we see nobody starts at the same place. So, like, in the, when you have the woman with the alabaster jar breaks the perfume. And so that's a bizarre story, by the way, okay?
Yeah.
That most commentators would say was a prostitute wiping Jesus' feet with her hair, letting her hair down. And Jesus said, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. So then we would rightfully theologically be like, okay, well, that would be salvation, trust in Jesus. Mm-hmm. Well, then you have a story later of the rich young ruler. And the rich young ruler is like, what must I do to inherit eternal life? He asked the question.
Break an alabaster jar and rub your hair all over his feet.
Yeah.
Boom! You would think, right? That's what I'm saying. Rich young ruler, not a big sacrifice, just, and you know, his hair would be like, it'd be kind of awkward. I picture him bald like Aaron, so that makes the story really fun. But what I'm saying is, no, it was sell everything you have and follow me. And you're like, which one is it? No. It's 100% based on your story.
Mm-hmm.
Your story. When we dismiss your story, we dismiss personal salvation.
Yeah.
100%.
Everybody's story matters. Where they come from, what it is.
That's exactly right.
I want to just get your thoughts on this verse, 1 Timothy 4:1. And I feel like this is like today, this is like about deconstruction. I feel like, but the Spirit explicitly says that in later times, some will fall away from their faith, paying attention to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons by means of hypocrisy of liars seared in their own conscience as branding iron. And it goes on and gives ideas, but just the idea that there will come a time that people will be falling away from their faith, paying attention to different people, different teachings, different thoughts. And just coming across that recently, I thought about this, this conversation that we're going through and people wanting to deconstruct their faith because of what they're being told or somewhere else. I don't know who you talk to in your book, but I mean, there's a great, these YouTubers, Rhett and Link.
Yeah.
Good Mythical Mornings, is that what
their
show is called?
Yeah,
because they used to be former youth pastors and they've stepped away completely from their faith because they're like, they talked about deconstruction. Part of it was the science fact of like, how can God create the heavens and earth at this certain amount of time? And I ran across this verse thinking about them, thinking, well, I mean, what are they paying attention to? I guess I just wanted to get your thoughts on the verse itself. I'm talking to a guy who wrote about deconstruction, and so it made me think of these guys.
Yeah. Great question. So let me say this about deconstruction. Deconstruction is, by the way, part of the pathway to deconversion. It's also part of the pathway to spiritual health. So let me say it like something physical. Food is part of the pathway to obesity. It's also part of the pathway to health.
It's the right. Okay, that's a great example. It's the right type of food. So
exactly right.
I preach on that. Like Matt's like, no. But this goes with this. Like, yeah, I get that because my wife and I have been on the carnivore lifestyle for like a year and a half now, and
I ate
more food than I had ever before in one day. But it's
the right kind.
I'm in better shape and I'm not obese.
Right. And you're not going to see, you're not going to find Aaron on the street corner just pounding, you know, double quarter pounders or something like that. That's not what he's doing when he's eating.
No.
He's doing it the right way.
Doing it the right way.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah. That's a great thing you said.
So food. So you see that, right? So when someone's like, deconstruction is what did this for me. Probably. It's the same way someone that's obese would be like, food did this to me. Probably.
Yeah.
But it's the unhealth of that item that did this to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to say deconstruction can never be bad. It has the ability to. Aaron, read again that verse if it's at your disposal. It's right there. Is it close?
Mm-hmm.
Read again, and then I want to jump in because there's a few words that stuck out to me.
But the Spirit explicitly, this is 1 Timothy 4:1.
Yep.
But the Spirit explicitly says that in later times, some will fall away from the faith, paying attention to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons. Verse 2, by means of the hypocrisy of liars seared in their own conscience, as with the branding iron.
Okay. So we're naturally going to think that verse is talking about people who don't think like me.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Naturally.
Mm. Yeah.
When you look at what Timothy's up against in the person trained in Paul, and you read Acts, right? Acts chapter 9, from Paul's conversion on, you see Paul constantly, like he's just trying to get the religious people to let Gentiles in. He even goes to the Council of Jerusalem and he's like, I actually need a letter. I need a letter from you. And they write it and they're like, circumcision, if you can, whatever. And Paul's like, fine, that'll do. So you just see this constantly from Paul. That's who taught Timothy. But then you also go to Galatians and Paul says, that's his first letter. Paul says, anyone who adds to these teachings, adds to Jesus, may they be condemned to hell. Right? Then he says it again, even if it's an angel. So then you read his other letters. Paul's false teachings he's up against is what? Addition to the gospel. Okay. Now, when we read 1 Timothy, that's who taught him. So when it talks about teachings of demons, it's probably not talking about progressive theology. It's probably talking about a type of religiosity that gets in the way of a relationship with God. And the reason I'd say that is not just who taught Timothy. I say that also because of hypocrisy, right? The hypocrisy factor comes in when you look at Jesus and you go, who's he calling hypocrites? The highly religious people who are demanding of other people but unwilling to do that themselves. So if we're living in the last times now, which every generation thinks that they are, so let's believe we are. If we're living in the last times now, we have hypocrites, right? Mm-hmm. That are being exposed. There's kind of like this reckoning happening right now. And the Assemblies of God and the Southern Baptists, there's like this, and in other denominations, the hypocrisy are the current teachers that have upped the ante. They've made the bar of entry so high, their teachings are that of demons. And people have fallen for it. And therefore, I would say Timothy's talking about the religious teachings that get in the way. He's not necessarily talking about progressive theology. Now, I do think that progressive theology in an unhealthy sense is talked about in that verse specifically because of who taught and all that stuff. I think what he's saying is, hey, people are falling for teachers who then are hypocrites, who then lives get exposed. And guess what happens when their lives get exposed? Those people fall away from the faith.
Because you put your faith in that.
Bingo. Concept. That's exactly right. What just happened. Yeah.
And once again, not putting your foundation on the fact that Christ rose from the grave.
That's right.
It's funny how it can be complicated and deep. And there's a lot of ins and outs. And there's a lot of this whole scene of deconstruction and those that are really exploring it and those that are really against it can get really just so involved and heated and yet remain as simple as what we're saying, or should remain as simple as are you maybe like just looking at the wrong stuff right now? You know,
right. And we read verses thinking like, I'm in the right. Those it's talking about those other people. It would be so much better if we read verses and go, is it talking about me?
Mm-hmm.
Is the Bible talking about me? Because the answer is yes. Yes, it is. It's talking about you.
I would imagine there's probably some people that decided to listen because they know somebody who's deconstructing. And maybe somebody that they're close to. So like a child, I'm sure you've had lots of conversations about somebody who, I don't know what this means. And then we've covered some of those bases. What do you say to somebody like that who's just scared? Because like, because I know now you said deconstruction can go one of two places. I hope it builds them up, but what if it goes the other way? You know, and they're just in that place of worried for that person that they love. How do you talk to them, or what do you say to them?
Yeah, I would say your role is vital. Okay, so your reaction to this is vital. In fact, I was at, I was in Bakersfield, right? That's where you all are at.
Yeah.
And there was someone who came up to me and said, will you please convince my, I don't remember how old, I want to say 14-year-old daughter that God exists. While I'm signing books, by the way, I'm like signing books.
She's right over there. You have
I was
minutes.
In that line. I got my book.
No, that's that's what was happening. So here's what I'd say. Your role's vital. Don't be the reason they deconvert.
Yeah.
Don't be the reason. And so the love you show to them is crucial. The burden of them and what they do with Jesus is not on you. It's not on you. But we can be responsible for like slingshotting them away. And we just don't want to do that. So be very loving. And let me say this too. Is there a way you can radically increase your curiosity? That would be key.
There's a good example of this. I don't remember if I brought it up on the show before, Aaron, but a friend of mine whose kids, he has adult kids, but the crowd they hang around, he's not so keen on. They have wildly different lifestyles than he knows or even approves of. Okay. So, but this guy, he's
are you really talking about yourself in third person?
not in this case. Not.
I actually know who he's talking about.
No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But he was telling me the story because he's really good at just loving on people. And, so I think it was his daughter had a birthday and all this big crowd was there and they're a little odd and they're a little uncomfortable to be around for him, but he just welcomed them in and they had pizza and he talked to them and he engaged them and they all hung out. And he said, after everybody left, there was a note for me on the table that said, hey, I think it was a card and they had all signed it. It was like, we don't usually get accepted anywhere. You let us just come here and just be us. And we felt welcomed and loved, and we just wanted to say thank you. Wow. And I mean, some of this you could probably read between the lines a little bit on, but that I think was what you're talking about. He was loving well. He wasn't going to be the reason. He wasn't going to voice what he didn't approve of, or you know where where things were being done wrong. He was going to reflect Jesus to them by loving them, and that's what actually impacted them.
That's right. Yeah, that's the change. I mean, and that's what Jesus commands us to do. We just forget it.
Mm-hmm.
We just forget the greatest commandment, right? That's said multiple times, love others. Yeah, love God, love others. Obviously, you're like, that's two commandments. No, Jesus saw it as one. He saw it as one.
Well, I highly suggest for anybody, if this has piqued your interest, or made you mad, I don't know. Check out the book, either books, Doubters Club, and you can find out more. I'd love to do maybe another time we can have you on just kind of talk about what Doubters Club is and how that works. I love it.
What's the name of the books, by the way, again?
So both books. So the first book is The Doubters Club, and the subtitle is Good Faith Conversations with Skeptics, Atheists, and Spiritually Wounded. And then the second book is called Deconstruct Faith, Discover Jesus. And by the way, for those who are skeptical, the subtitle there is How Questioning Your Religion Can Lead You to a Healthy and Holy God.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've, having read through both, I've learned a lot, and I feel like for anyone's like, I don't know, this guy is, it's very solid. I mean, I'm no theologian or expert, but anytime that I felt like some of those buttons being pushed, like, oh, no, there he goes again using Jesus. He knows what he's talking about, you know. So they're incredible books, and I learned a lot. Thank you for taking the time to talk about some of this. I know it's depending on everyone's where they sit with this, or, you know, the people they know going through it. It's hard to wrestle with and to understand sometimes. So I appreciate you helping us have a better understanding of it.
Well, it's my pleasure. And let's do a part two in whatever way that's helpful.
Absolutely. Let's plan on it. As for now, Consider It Joy is a production of 88.3 Life FM. We're in Bakersfield, California, where you can listen to us every week on the 88.3 Life FM app. You can also find all the ways to listen or connect. Consider It Joy Podcast.com.